A65. Number 2B.
So she goes on and says, the anatomy of Christian Science teaches when, but also and how to probe the self-inflicted wounds of selfishness, malice, envy, and hate. So it is the self-inflicted wounds. It shows that we really harm ourselves, and I like that. So that we not constantly think it is somebody else or something else that brings us all these wounds. We wound ourselves always. If we have a true consciousness, nothing can wound us. If our motives are right, and she tells them afterwards what right motives are, we will never be wounded. We'll never suffer from wounds. So it's self-inflicted. If you only could remember that constantly, that if something goes wrong with ourselves, it's our consciousness. It goes on within our consciousness. We suffer because something doesn't seem to be in accord with our desires, with our view, with our motives. If our views and motives are divine, nothing can wound us. If our motives and desire are human, it does touch us. So we have to see that in order not to have constantly these self-inflicted wounds. And then she has a short sentence. I remember that sentence when I was a young student. I was every day was praying over that one sentence. It was at the day when I really did take a mental anatomy together with scientific obstetrics. I know when I went through class with John Dorley, he pointed this out, and it somehow hit me, I guess, because I needed it. And I never forgot it. And as a young student, I remember over years and years, I was praying over this one sentence. It says, it teaches the control of mad ambition. Suddenly she comes in with that sentence, that it teaches the control of mad ambition. And everybody thinks he has no mad ambitions. Everyone. It hit me because I thought, well, that's no problem for me, you know? It's no problem for me. I love Christian Science. I was touched by the scientific aspect that John Dolley brought out at that time. I felt this is great, this is wonderful. And then I began to realize that if we really want to be prepared for the birth, we have to dissect the thoughts, as she said, to probe really what is the quantity and quality and origin. And so I began to pray about that and make a whole list of how mad ambition could operate. I had for myself just a nice list. Nobody saw it. I was proud enough not to, to show it to others. And I began to ask myself, what is motivating me really? And are my motives really so that I can say they conform to the quantity, quality, and origin that is divine? I was making a whole list, and if you do it, you will find out that quite a few things are operating within oneself. What is mad ambition? Mad ambition is any ambition that is not set out by God himself. That's the origin. Only that which God wants to be brought about, to come to birth, is true ambition. Everything else is mad ambition. What is all that mad ambition? Well, that mad ambition, actually, in everyone is something different. And in somebody, one false ambition has a bigger quantity than in another one, but the quality of mad ambition is practically in everyone. In everyone. We want to study Christian Science because we like it. If I go out from the we, I don't go out from God. Go out from a false origin. We study Christian Science because we want our problems to be solved. Well, that's very selfish. We limit the whole idea of infinity way down to our little problems and are concerned with our little problems and put those into the center of our whole endeavor and our whole study. Do we study Christian Science because I want to make a success of it? Well, you think that's right, huh? No. What is success? We define what the success is. How do we know what success is in Christian Science? It's a mad ambition. I began to see it's a mad ambition to think that I can do anything with Christian Science that is, is aggrandizement, that has to do with to come into the limelight itch, as Mr. Dawley called it, to be something, to know more than the other one. That's mad ambition, to know more than the other one, to understand Christian Science better than the other one. That's mad ambition, because it has all to do with me personally, with my endeavor, and comparing my endeavor with other people. This is not the divine origin. It has nothing to do with that. And so, as you begin to analyze yourself and ask yourself now, why on earth do I want really to study Christian Science? Why do I want to love Christian Science? Why do I think I love Christian Science? And analyze it really right down to the bones. You will feel and see that there is a lot of mad ambition operating within ourselves. A lot. And as long as that is operating, well, we have not got rid of error. But analyzing it, it helps to say, okay, then I must have a different attitude. Until one comes to that standpoint where one begins to see that the only ambition is that which God wants to fulfill. How he fulfills it, that's not my problem. When he fulfills it, that's not my problem. I don't have to try humanly how to do it and when to do it and the whys and the wherefores. It's all a question of submitting oneself completely to what God has in store for himself and for us. So she goes on, and so just have this other point in view next to the self-knowledge, then that asking really for the, that if we don't know ourselves, we have our self-inflicted wounds. To heal ourselves of these errors really demands something quite different, that it really demands then that we ask ourselves, what is real ambition? Free ourselves of the mad ambitions. So it teaches the control of mad ambition. But how? It unfolds the hallowed influences of. And she gives three terms that have to do with love. And there are three terms that have to do with the three degrees. Governing the three degrees with love. So the accent here is now on love. Love is a small L. It unfolds the hallowed influences of unselfishness. Can you see? It's the unselfishness. It's not the love for ourselves, for our own self, the first degree. So it corrects that first degree through love, from the point of view of love, by being unselfish. Can you reason out for yourself? You can only do it for yourself. And if you are saying to yourself, now, let me be honest one evening. Be alone with yourself and say, let me be honest now, once in a lifetime with myself. Really honest. Am I really studying this idea and following this idea out of an unselfish motive? Absolutely free from myself. Is it actually so that I don't want to get anything out of it for me? It's a deep question. And very soon one finds out that one wants something for oneself. That one is very much concerned that I get something out of it. Why should I put so much work and devotion into a subject and not to get out of it something for myself? Can you see? That's not love. We remember that the whole textbook starts out with that subject of motive. The very first page is the page that begins with what is our true desire. And in the very first paragraph of that very first chapter, we have that unselfed love that Christian Science has to do with spiritual understanding. An unselfed love. It's more than an unselfish love. It's a love that knows no self. It knows no me as a self, nor does it know my husband or wife as a self, nor my children as a self, nor anything as a self. A self, an ego, is just cut out. That's the beginning of the textbook. And the whole understanding of that whole textbook rests on that very foundation. The moment we overlook that and think, no, it hasn't to do with an unselfed love, the whole textbook doesn't really make bang, doesn't really have a terrific impact on our life. It's only when we start right out with that unselfed love where we are seeing that in being that only knows the capitalized terms, that being does not know any self, any ego, any person, any man, any woman, any children, nothing like that. It only knows itself. If we really ask ourselves now, do I have this hallowed influence of unselfishness? We must ask ourselves, is not there something within us that wants something for oneself? Second, it unfolds the hallowed influence of philanthropy. You know, philanthropy means phil is love for men. Phil, anthropos, is the love for men. It's a second degree that is handled here and healed, so to say, from the point of view of love. Is it that we really have a sense that this is here for the love of mankind, for all mankind? Or is it just for the love of a few people that I call my family, or my business, or my country? All that is not philanthropy. It's not for the love of man. It's too limited, so narrow. Is it... And third, for the hallowed influences of spiritual love. Now you have the third degree, the hallowed influence of spiritual love. So we must ask ourselves and test ourselves through mental self-knowledge. What is going on within ourselves? What is our motive? Is our motive really, really unselfish? And we can't get away just by saying, oh yes, it's very unselfish, I don't want anything for me, I only want it for my family. You know? That's just as selfish. That's not true selfishness. So, these are the criteria on which we can measure our present state. Then, if we have really dealt with these mad ambitions, these are all mad ambitions, if we want anything for ourselves or for people or for a nation or anything that is limited, God does not know. Always just go back and say to yourself, does God know that which I feel should be demonstrated or that which I love? Does God know me as a person? No. Does God know my family? No. Does God know my business? No. Does God know my country? No. Does God know a material world? No. You have a simple measuring rod. And only in this way we can free ourselves from our limited concept which we have about God and the universe. So it's also freeing us from our best human sense of what Christian Science is or should be, or ought to be, even from our best human sense. There is only one reality, and that's the spiritual reality. Then we are really over the hump, I think, as you say. And then she says, then it urges the government of the body both in health and in sickness, as a preventive activity and as a healing activities. The moment, therefore, that is cleared up within ourselves, we do no more be afraid of all the various aspects of error that could beset us. I always feel the moment we have touched mental anatomy honestly enough and have somehow changed our attitude, I think we are absolutely free from the attacks of error of any kind of sort. There is nothing anymore within us that can receive us, can receive any kind of error. And so if we clear our ground within us so that no seed of error can be sown within ourselves and grow therefore within ourselves, we are really governed then our body in health and in sickness. The Christian Scientist, through understanding mental anatomy, discerns and deals with the real cause of disease. It's one of the very few sentences in the textbook where Mrs. Eddy couples real with disease. Not that she says that disease is real, but with a real cause of disease. Naturally, we would say there is no real cause of disease, but you can see what she means. I mean, her language is flexible enough to mean that instead of dealing with the superficial cause or the secondary cause of disease, that we should really deal with the first, that's the first cause of disease. What is it? The real cause of disease is what is in you, what is in me. If there is nothing in me that is unlike the divine, then there is nothing that can, no error that can grow there. So this is what I wanted to point out in regard to mental anatomy, because I feel as we leave now with this week, the whole syllabus study, that also each one would have to ask himself, where am I? What motivates us? It's interesting in a way when you see or when you read, for instance, John Dolly's verbatim reports on the summer school, on his last summer school, 1949, that was more or less the pinnacle of his teaching, really the heights of his teaching, that summer school. And At that summer school, I remember, and you can read it, but perhaps when one has been there, one has felt the atmosphere even more than perhaps what one could get out of an edited verbatim report. It was all on the tone. It was a very, very deep, searching summer school. It wasn't a summer school up in cloud nine, you know, happy and so on. It was very deep searching, a summer school. I always will come back to the question, what is your motive? Why do you study Christian Science? Why do you want to be a Christian scientist? Why do you want to devote time and energy to Christian Science? Be sure that the motive is right. Or you spend a lot of time and money and energy on something that will be a disappointment for you. You must really throw out the nets on the right side, and then you catch the fishes. It must be the right attitude. And always he will come back to the question, what motivates you? What is your desire? What is your what is in your heart? Do you really want Christian Science because of what it is? Or do you have any other motive behind it? And he would tell us that if there are any other motives, that will fail, that it doesn't work. So I like to point out this too. I can tell you, we don't lose anything, to be honest with oneself, for a while. Just to be quite honest with oneself and make a nice list how we actually deviate from this sense of mental self-knowledge and how much of mad ambition is within us. And that mad ambition is all covered and nicely veiled through arguments that we call divine. I only want to help mankind. I only want, what I really do is certainly good because it concerns God. I only want to know God. And all these things come up, you know. And when you go a little bit deeper, you will find out that it isn't so what really the 6,000 and 7,000 year period asked us to do. See, with the sixth, in the fifth, you still have the oneness of the human, of the Jesus, of the symbol, and the idea. But with the 6,000 year period, and then with the 7,000 year period, everything within us must be free from any human concept, from any human aims and means. Even if those human aims and means, like the second degree, is considered to be good. I only want it for the good of mankind. I only want it for the good of my family. I only want it for the good of this and that and the other. And analyzing, we can see that it's not for the good of God. And it's not seeing that, just remember that always, God does not know, neither a person nor a thing nor a world nor a nation nor a politics nor anything, just does not know it. That's the teaching of Christian Science, that God only knows his own ideas and nothing beside it. And only as we are living, as our consciousness tries to be in line with that altitude of thought, do we really practice Christian Science? Are we really a Christian scientist? Well, that has been introduced with, as you know, through the 13th chapter of Teaching Christian Science, where she showed that really that what makes up Christian scientists is really to be constantly one with the divine principle. And only has in view that what divine principle wants to demonstrate and work out. It's asking a lot of the human to give up. But we never lose anything by giving up the human. I mean, I must be clear now about giving up the human concept. because the divine will always demonstrate itself on the human level. It will always demonstrate and govern in health and in sickness. That's absolutely clear. But it only does it better by giving up the human concept, and not by enforcing the human concept of good. Yes. Well, that's, I think, what I wanted to point out. And so I think we are just about ready for a nice break, and then we start with the levels. Okay.